Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Health Report and Explorations, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, my friends, and welcome back to the program that helps you learn and improve your American English. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Today, we return to Southeast Asia to hear about efforts to remove a dangerous chemical that was used during the Vietnam War. Then, to the moon! In fact, into the moon! NASA has sent a spacecraft crashing into our nightly neighbor to study, of all things, dust. If you stay with us, you'll find out why. As It Is, from VOA, is on the air. Officials from the United States and Vietnam attended a ceremony last weekend at a former U.S. air base in central Vietnam. The event marked a new step in efforts to clean up a chemical used by American forces during the Vietnam War. The U.S. military used the chemical known as Agent Orange to destroy plants and trees. Agent Orange has been linked to some forms of cancer and other health problems. Jonathan Evans tells us more.
The U.S. military used Agent Orange during the Vietnam War to destroy tree cover for communist troops. However, the herbicide releases a poisonous byproduct, or dioxin. It has been linked to diseases such as diabetes, cancer, and birth defects. Last Saturday, officials from both countries met at the Da Nang Air Base, where Agent Orange was once stored. The base is one of 28 dioxin hotspots in Vietnam. Officials plan to clean up the polluted soil in the affected areas by cooking it at high temperatures. David Shear is the U.S. ambassador to Vietnam. He spoke about the cleanup process.
We built a containment structure roughly the size of a football field and filled it with 45,000 cubic meters of dioxin-contaminated soil. Beginning today, the contaminated soil will be heated to extremely high temperatures to destroy the dioxin. After approximately 4 months, the soil will be tested to confirm that the project cleanup goals have been achieved.
Patrick Leahy is a senator from the American state of Vermont. He says the Agent Orange project has four goals.
First, to eliminate the danger from dioxin to people living here. Second, to show that for so many years, the United States did not ignore this problem. We've returned to take care of it. Third, that our two countries can work together that on a problem that for more than three decades was an obstacle to better relations. And fourth, to improve services for people with disabilities, regardless of the cause. It may have been caused by Agent Orange.
Repairing relations has been an important issue for the U.S. and Vietnam since the two sides reestablished ties nearly 20 years ago. The cleanup is a sign of progress in cooperation between the two governments. Ambassador Shear spoke about this cooperation during his speech at the event.
As many of you know, President Obama and President Sung inaugurated the new U.S.-Vietnam Comprehensive Partnership last summer. And I can think of no better example for our growing friendship than this project.
The United States continues to provide money for the Agent Orange cleanup and projects to help people with disabilities in Vietnam. But the U.S. has never admitted responsibility for health problems caused by dioxin. Carl Thayer is a professor from the University of New South Wales in Australia.
America is trying to avoid all the one-to-one compensation cases that would come. Yeah, arguing the scientific evidence isn't exactly clear. You have no basis. You don't know what the genetics were of the people involved to begin with. And that's what a good defense lawyer would do.
In 2004, a group of Vietnamese took legal action against the chemical companies that produced Agent Orange. But a U.S. federal judge dismissed the case. The judge ruled that the use of Agent Orange did not violate international law at the time it was used. Nguyen Chi Vinh is Vietnam's Vice Minister of National Defense. He believes the Agent Orange project is an opportunity to look to the future. He says he believes the success of the Agent Orange project does not depend on fixing past issues, but on opening a new road for the future. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Recently, the American Space Agency, NASA, directed one of its spacecraft to crash on the moon. The spacecraft was known as the Lunar Atmosphere and Dust Environment Explorer, or LADEE. Before the crashing on the moon's surface, NASA scientists collected information from LADEE. Mario Ritter likes looking at the moon, and he tells us about some early findings.
NASA launched the spacecraft from its Wallops Flight Facility in Virginia on September 6, 2013. A Minotaur 5 rocket carried LADEE into space.
Zero ignition and liftoff.
LADEE has been orbiting the moon since last October. The tube-shaped vehicle was about the size of a vending machine, with solar equipment on its sides. The goal was to study dust in the moon's atmosphere. Butler Hine is project manager with NASA's Ames Research Center in California. Speaking by Skype, he says LADEE began taking measurements at 250 kilometers above the moon's surface.
And as we got lower into the science orbit, the dust density just kept increasing.
So where does all that dust come from, and how does it move around the moon? To answer those questions, LADEE's instruments made about 700,000 measurements.
And one of the things that that we saw is that it's almost a continuous shroud around the moon. And some of the production of the dust is done by meteoroid impacts to the moon, and that's kind of a continuous rain on the moon. And so the source of the dust is kind of a continuous thing.
Butler Hine says a moon-based observatory would have to deal with all the dust. But he thinks the dust would not cause problems for spacecraft or human activity on the surface.
And what we've seen so far is that while there's a lot of dust, the levels are high, we haven't seen any indication that level of dust is a hazard at all.
LADEE found evidence of neon, argon, methane, carbon dioxide, and other substances. It also successfully tested a broadband communication system between Earth and the Moon. Butler Hine thinks LADEE's space bus design could be copied for other missions.
The spacecraft can be put together in different ways depending on the type of mission. So, for instance, this bus can be configured as a lunar orbiter, which is what LADEE is. It's designed for the environment anywhere between the Earth orbit and Mars orbit. It's even designed as a lunar lander configuration. So you can take some of the bus modules, put them together in a fashion where it could land on the moon.
NASA scientists were concerned about a lunar eclipse during LADEE's final days. During this period, the solar equipment was in total darkness. For 4 hours, the spacecraft had to depend on battery power to protect its systems from freezing.
We basically prepared the spacecraft ahead of the eclipse, where we turned off the science instruments to conserve power. We turned on and off different heaters, or configured them to go on and off, and then we let it fly through the eclipse.
But LADEE did not need much more power. The spacecraft was programmed to crash on the far side of the moon, far from the historic areas where astronauts have landed. it continued to gather and send information to Earth in its final days. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. That's all for today, but don't go away. There are more Learning English programs yet to come. And world news at the beginning of the hour on VOA.
The Health Report is next, followed by Explorations. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health Report. Ketamine is a drug that puts people and animals into a deep sleep. Doctors inject it into patients so they can be operated on. Unofficially, ketamine is a street drug, which means it is sold and used illegally. However, ketamine may prove useful as a medicine to treat sickness, too. A new study shows the drug may help people who suffer from depression. Researchers in Britain studied 28 patients suffering from severe depression. Some of them reported feeling better, like a weight had been lifted from them, soon after receiving injections of the drug. Rupert McShane led the study. He says 8 of the 28 patients injected got good results. Dr. McShane reported that 3 of those 8 said they felt better just hours after getting one injection of ketamine.
So typically by about 6 hours, people are saying, gosh, you know, I'm feeling like a weight has lifted from me, I can think more freely.
The drug's apparent effects lasted 1 to 6 months. Researchers are looking for ways to make these effects last longer. Researchers in the United States have carried out 6 larger studies on ketamine and depression. They found the drug to be helpful in quickly easing the effects of depression that are usually difficult to treat. Carlos Zarate is a researcher with the U.S. National Institute of Mental Health. He says there are 30 different kinds of antidepressant drugs on the market. But, he says, they do not help all the signs of depression. One drug may help the extreme tiredness that can come with depression. However, the same drug might not ease the feelings of deep sadness. Another drug may improve a depressed person's ability to think clearly, but it may not help stop thoughts of suicide. So Mr. Zarate says most depression patients are treated with more than one drug. The reason ketamine is so effective could be that it goes directly to a brain chemical linked to depression. He says traditional antidepressants target that chemical only indirectly.
What takes about a couple of hours with ketamine would take approximately 6 weeks with our standard antidepressants.
Research is now focused on how to safely treat patients with ketamine and how to make them feel better longer. The British study of ketamine was published in the Journal of Psychopharmacology. Psycho meaning dealing with the mind, pharmacology meaning the study of drugs. Psychopharmacology is the study of drugs on the mind. And that's the Health Report from VOA Learning English. I'm Ana Mateo.
Thank you.
Welcome to Explorations in VOA Special English. I'm Mario Ritter. Today, Steve Ember and Barbara Klein tell us about one of the most influential and skillful writers in the history of literature. For more than 400 years, people around the world and in many cultures have been reading, watching, and listening to the plays and poetry of the English writer William Shakespeare.
Ah, me.
She speaks. Oh, speak again, bright angel.
Oh, Romeo, Romeo. Wherefore art thou, Romeo? Deny thy father, and refuse thy name. Or if thou wilt not, be but sworn my love, and I'll no longer be a Capulet.
You just heard part of a famous scene from a movie version of Romeo and Juliet. This tragic play remains one of the greatest and perhaps most famous love stories ever told. It tells about two young people who meet and fall deeply in love. But their families, the Capulets and the Montagues, are enemies and will not allow them to be together. Romeo and Juliet are surrounded by violent fighting and generational conflict. The young lovers secretly marry, but their story has a tragic ending. Romeo and Juliet shows how William Shakespeare's plays shine with extraordinarily rich and imaginative language. He invented thousands of words to color his works. They have become part of the English language. Shakespeare's universal stories show all the human emotions and conflicts. His works are as fresh today as they were 400 years ago.
William Shakespeare was born in 1564 in the town of Stratford-upon-Avon. He married Anne Hathaway at the age of 18. The couple had three children, two daughters and a son, who died very young. Shakespeare moved to London in the late 1580s to be at the center of the city's busy theater life. Most people think of Shakespeare as a writer, but he was also a theater producer, a part owner of an acting company, and an actor. For most of his career, he was a producer and main writer for an acting company called The King's Men.
In 1599, Shakespeare's company was successful enough to build its own theater called The Globe. Public theaters during this time were usually three floor levels high and were built around a stage area where the actors performed. The Globe could hold as many as 3,000 people. People from all levels of society would attend performances. The poorer people could buy tickets for a small amount of money to stand near the stage. Wealthier people could buy more costly tickets to sit in other areas. Often it was not very important if wealthy people could see the stage well. It was more important that they be in a seat where everyone could see them.
It was difficult to light large indoor spaces during this time. The Globe was an outdoor theater with no roof on top, so that sunlight could stream in. Because of the open-air stage, actors had to shout very loudly and make big motions to be heard and seen by all. This acting style is quite different from play acting today. It might also surprise you that all actors during this period were men. Young boys in women's clothing played the roles of female characters. This is because it was against the law in England for women to act on stage. Shakespeare's theater group also performed in other places, such as the smaller indoor Blackfriars Theater, or they would travel around the countryside to perform. Sometimes they were asked to perform at the palace of the English ruler, Queen Elizabeth, or later, King James I.
Shakespeare is best known for the 39 plays that he wrote, although only 38 exist today. His plays are usually divided into three groups: comedies, histories, and tragedies. The comedies are playful and funny. They usually deal with marriage and the funny activities of people in love. These comedies often tell many stories at the same time, like plays within plays.
Much Ado About Nothing is a good example of a Shakespearean comedy. It tells the story of two couples. Benedick and Beatrice each claim they will never marry. They enjoy attacking each other with funny insults. Their friends work out a plan to make the two secretly fall in love. Claudio and Hero are the other couple. They fall in love at once and plan to marry. But Claudio wrongly accuses Hero of being with another man and refuses to marry her. Hero's family decides to make Claudio believe that she is dead until her innocence can be proved. Claudio soon realizes his mistake and mourns for Hero. By the end of the play, love wins over everyone, and there is a marriage ceremony for the four lovers.
Shakespeare's histories are intense explorations of actual English rulers. This was a newer kind of play that developed during Shakespeare's time. Other writers may have written historical plays, but no one could match Shakespeare's skill. Plays about rulers like Henry IV and Richard III explore Britain's history during a time when the country was going through tense political struggles.
Many Shakespearean tragedies are about conflicting family loyalties or a character seeking to punish others for the wrongful death of a loved one. Hamlet tells the story of the son of the king of Denmark. When Hamlet's father unexpectedly dies, his uncle Claudius becomes ruler and marries Hamlet's mother. One night, a ghostly spirit visits Hamlet and tells him that Claudius killed his father. Hamlet decides to pretend that he is crazy to learn if this is true. This intense play captures the conflicted inner life of Hamlet. This young man must struggle between his moral beliefs and his desire to seek punishment for his father's death. Here is a famous speech from a movie version of Hamlet. The actor Laurence Olivier shines in this difficult role.
To be or not to be, that is the question. whether it is nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles, and by opposing, end them.
Shakespeare also wrote one of the greatest collections of poems in English literature. He wrote several long poems, but is best known for his 154 short poems or sonnets. The English sonnet has a very exact structure. It must have 14 lines, with three groups of four lines that set up the subject or problem of the poem. The sonnet is resolved in the last two lines of the poem. If that requirement seems demanding, Shakespeare's sonnets are also written in iambic pentameter. This is a kind of structure in which each line has 10 syllables or beats, with a stress on every second beat.
Even with these restrictive rules, the sonnets seem effortless. They have the most creative language and imaginative comparisons of any other poems. Most of the sonnets are love poems. Some of them are attacks, while others are celebrations. The sonnets express everything from pain and death to desire, wisdom, and happiness. Here is one of Shakespeare's most famous poems. Sonnet 18 tells the story about the lasting nature of poetry. The speaker describes how the person he loves will remain forever young and beautiful in the lines of this poem.
Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease hath all too short a date. Sometimes too hot the eye of heaven shines, and often is his gold complexion dimmed, and every fair from fair sometime declines by chance or nature's changing course untrimmed. But thy eternal summer shall not fade, nor lose possession of that fair thou owest. Nor shall death brag thou wanderest in his shade when in eternal lines to time thou growest. So long as men can breathe, or eyes can see, so long lives this, and this gives life to thee.
In part two, we explore the ways that Shakespeare's work has influenced world culture. This program was written and produced by Dana Demange. Steve Ember and Barbara Klein were our announcers. You can read and listen to this program and other Learning English products on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Join us again next week for Explorations in VOA Special English.